Welcome to the Living Waters Church Podcast.
So we're taking a break tonight from our series that we're in, which is called When God Was Little. We're going to pick that up again next week, but because we had the kids' production this morning, we thought we'd do something a little bit different this evening and discuss a topic and a theme at Christmas that we actually find in all of those movies that we just saw, and in many, many more Christmas movies that we find all throughout the season. It's a theme that I think really lurks beneath the surface of Christmas, and though when it's pointed out to us, it's really obvious, but sometimes we mistake it for something different than it actually is. But it really holds this season together in many ways. And so if you have your Bibles, you can open up to 2 Corinthians. We're going to be rooted in chapter 5 in just a couple of verses, in 17 and 19 tonight. And we're going to talk about the incarnate implication. I think it's really hard to get into the Christmas season and not notice this theme that I've mentioned. There's many sub-themes to the season, but this one I really think stands above the rest. We find it in story and in song and in commercials and greeting cards. And our culture has taken note of it, which is why we see the movies that get made. And we express it most obviously through the screen and through the stage and things like that. The theme that we find in these stories at Christmas time can really be summed up in one word. And that word is reconciliation. Deep in all of these movies that you actually just saw in the theme, they actually all center around reconciliation. In other movies like The Grinch or A Christmas Carol or Home Alone or Polar Express, even Elf and simple songs like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, they actually are fun, they're festive. They're a lot of energy and they're exciting, but there's something that really holds them all together and actually gives them meaning and depth and draws us to them. And that is the hope and eventual realization in most of these stories about a reconciliation between a couple of characters, or maybe one character and a family, or one character and even a dream. This idea that what is divided can actually come back together. And that's what gives these movies heart. And they might be fun, but what really hooks us is our deeper inner longing for that. So the story of reconciliation, I think, is really obvious at Christmas time. And if we listen carefully, I think we'll really notice that it's actually lurking deep within our personal inner longings. Even though most of us have really messy situations in our lives. I hope that you have people around you that love you. I'm sure that you do. But if you're like me, there's probably situations, friendships, relationships, people around you that things aren't always harmonious. Things don't always work out really well, and they can be kind of awkward. And so reconciliation is something that we really long for with the people around us, but it's often hard to get to. It's often hard to find yourself in that spot. It's a powerful thing, but at the heart of it, it's a really difficult thing as well. And so as fun as these movies are, I think what we really are drawn to is not the fun in them, but is the journey that these characters go on towards reconciliation. And when they finally find it, I think that gives us great hope for ourselves in some way. Reconciliation, though it's a difficult thing, this is something that we all must engage in, or else we will end up like Scrooge or the Grinch. We will end up alone. We will end up cold and bitter. What we really want most is togetherness, and togetherness is what Christmas is really all about. I don't really know anybody who lives happily when they're at bitter odds with somebody else. I don't think that anybody wishes this for themselves, and yet constantly, we find ourselves divided. We find ourselves at odds with people. And sometimes it's over little things, and sometimes it's over really big things. There's sort of that age-old joke that you see all through movies and television, where two characters have been fighting for so long that they don't actually remember what they're fighting about. You've seen that before. I think sometimes we've been there. And these stories that we've noted become a breath of fresh air for us, don't they? They become the idea, sort of a glimpse of hope that perhaps reconciliation is possible for us with people that are estranged to us in our lives right now. And so I think the reason that we find it obsessed over is because Christmas is really, in a way, the opening chapter of the reconciliation story. It's act one in many ways. And so the arrival of Jesus can simply point to the rest of the story and say, this is where it all begins. This is the start. And if you think that this story is compelling, if you think that the manger is a compelling symbol, just wait till we get to the cross. And so the incarnation, as part of sort of the whole story, is really just about reconciliation. And reconciliation, I believe, is deep within each of our inner longings. We really desperately want it. We want to be reconciled people. And some people would say, you know, they want to feel connected or reconciled to the universe. Some people would say they want to feel that with the planet. Some people would outrightly say that. Christians would say, be reconciled to God. But many people just want to be reconciled to each other. We've got this sense, this deeper inner longing for it. There's sort of a primal hunger for reunion, an ache for settlement or resolution with something or with somebody that we feel at odds with. And when we feel at odds with somebody, I really think that we know that it's not right. It doesn't seem to be the way we know we should live. As Leanne would say it, we know it in our knower. She said that a number of years ago, and it was a great phrase. We just know something's not quite right. And when you sense a rift between yourself and another person, you feel it. It's awkward, and you wish that it weren't there, and you can't really seem to function properly. The sense is often silent, but we've all definitely felt it. We felt it in marriage, we felt it in friendship, or in parenthood, or in childhood, or with coworkers. I know I do all the time with coworkers. Everybody's felt an interpersonal rift. It's cold and it's bothersome. And if you're like me, it can keep you up at night. You can be replaying those conversations. Their faces come to your mind. And deep down, we know that this is not the way it really should be. But there's a bigger rift that we have identified as Christians, and a lot of people can't really put their finger on it. It's not as definable as a flesh and blood interpersonal conflict, and we search, and we can't always find the antidote for the feeling, and so some people just live with it. But once you identify it, I think that it seems the most obvious thing in the world, but until then, people just feel empty and lost in like a great divide, and they feel at odds with something, unsatisfied with something. Christians, you know, we believe that this rift is between God and people, and it's caused by our rebellion and our mistrust of God, our inability or unwillingness really to rely on God. And we are sort of driven by this rift, and we find ourselves filling our lives up with all sorts of things that would hopefully make us feel better or calm us down or bring some kind of an antidote. But we know that it never really will. And so instead of leaning on God, we lean on any number of things that may steal our attention for a moment or two or bring us kind of happiness or fulfillment, which of course we know it really doesn't. But Christians also believe that this is not necessarily the end of things. This is really only half the tale. There's a great thing about reading the Gospels. We've been working through Mark in the last number of months. The great thing about that is that each story that centers on Jesus points to the reality of that. This is not, as Doug said earlier, this is not the end of the story. Each story is drenched in God's character and therefore is drenched in hope. So when we see healings or parables or impromptu interactions with rich young men or women at wells, each story, I think, reveals God's character in the way that he does things. And so when Jesus acts or when Jesus speaks in a certain way, God's character is being demonstrated in plain sight. There's no smoke and mirrors that we have to be looking out for. There's no great and powerful Oz hiding behind a curtain. It's just Jesus simply interacting with people, putting flesh on God's character. And so when Jesus first put flesh on God's character at Christmas, Jesus' arrival, we see the very same thing. Leanne pointed this out last week. Baby Jesus shows us what God's like and what God values. She put it really well. She said this. When Jesus entered the world as a baby, he was demonstrating what God measures in his kingdom: humility, dependence, openness, and sacrifice. And so at Christmas, we really find this good news of great joy that's heralded by angels that will fulfill that great human longing for reconciliation with God. And that's really where it starts. It starts when we are reconciled, when we are no longer divided, when we're no longer away from God, but we are connected to God, and we truly know what life is actually all about. And that's what we long for. We long for harmony and connection with him, because he gave us life. And apart from him, all we're going to find is death. The Apostle Paul says it this way, which is our passage. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 17. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone, and a new life has begun. And all of this is a gift from God, who brought us back to himself through Christ. And God has given us this task of reconciling people to him. For God was in Christ, reconciling the world to himself, no longer counting people's sins against them. And he gave us this wonderful message of reconciliation. So Paul speaks to the reality that he understands the gospel to be, that we can be connected to God where previously we were separated from him. And so in light of this passage, and I think our reconciliation obsession at Christmas, and we might not outright say that our culture is obsessed with reconciliation, but every single film we make and every single book we write and play we write and song we sing is about being together, is about being connected, is about overcoming a divide, every single one. So I think our culture is obsessed. They do know what that longing is. In light of that, and in light of this passage, I'd really just like to ask two questions. And not so much focus on our reconciliation to God, because the majority of us here have experienced that, but really about our reconciliation to each other. So in light of this passage, the two questions I want to ask are, first, what is reconciliation? What does it actually look like? What has happened when reconciliation occurs? And the second is, how does it happen? And real simple terms, how does reconciliation really work? And what is our part that we play in it? So at the risk of sounding overly simplistic this evening, would you just come along with me to a really overly simplistic look at reconciliation? And likely as I've been talking for the first few minutes here, and we've been using this word, and we've been describing situations, you've probably already got people in your mind. You probably already have family members and friends and coworkers and people that you sense there is a rift, there is a breaking of a cord, there's something that's not quite right there. And what I'm going to encourage you to do is we walk through what reconciliation is and maybe how it works and what our parts can be in it. I'm just going to encourage you to be open to it, be open to the Word of God, and to take all of those thoughts that are going to shoot into your mind that go, but you can't, but you can't, but you can't, and just maybe let them hang around over here somewhere for a while, okay? What is reconciliation? First, when reconciliation has happened, something has happened. Something has happened. An exchange has occurred. Okay? Reconciliation is a verb. It's quite simply an action. There's an action involved. A change has made. So something has to happen when reconciliation is going on. The change that is made is when a negative situation moves to a positive situation. And this all begins by recognizing and really admitting that two parties are at odds and they need to be brought together. They need to move from disunity to harmony. And so as an action, reconciling is about bringing together what was previously divided. And that's a really great simple explanation of reconciliation and definition, maybe. It's about bringing together what was previously divided, maybe what's actually meant to be together. So on to the second question, having defined what reconciliation is. How does it happen? This is where we're going to use this passage and see what the Bible has to say about reconciliation. What is the reconciliation template that we have? What has God done, and how is that supposed to translate into our lives? In verse 19, Paul says that God was in Christ, reconciling the world to himself. So a change, as we mentioned before, a change in the relationship between God and man happened. God is making the change, Paul says. God takes the action. God was the one affecting or altering the relationship. That's really important to understand, and we've hit this a few times in the book of Mark, but I really would hate for us to miss it before the end of 2013. It's really important to understand that this was very different than how everybody in the ancient world understood divine interaction to be. Whether you were Jewish or you were Greek, the responsibility, the burden of appeasement and restoration of balance or divine favor, that burden was on us. That burden was on humanity. It was on you. You were expected to appease the gods. You were expected to make things right. You had to do something. You had to make the sacrifice. You had to restore the balance. You had to take the step. You had to confess the sin. You had to right the wrong before you got the favor back. So when Paul says that God reconciled the world to himself, this way of doing things changed. God was doing the work that you were supposed to do. God changed everything in this way. What this means is the incarnation, Jesus' arrival, was God's decisive step towards reconciliation between himself and humankind. God made the move. And that's what Christmas is all about. It's recognizing that God made the move, that we weren't going to make the move, nor were we able to make the move, and yet God made the move towards us. How did he do that? Well, Paul says quite simply in this passage, by no longer counting the people's sins against them, which is easier said than done. This sheds some light on that sort of great sense, that rift that we feel that we have with God. The Christian message says that we have wronged God, that we have rebelled against him, that we are indebted to him, and that we have rebelled, and that's why we're feeling this sense of harmony or unity. So this language really lends us to see that in this relationship we have with God, somebody owed somebody else something. There is at the core, I think, of every situation where one person is at odds with another, there is a sense that somebody owes somebody else something. One person or both feel wronged. They feel they are owed something. They feel they are owed an apology. They are owed money. They are owed respect. And when that debt isn't paid, the interest, so to speak, will compound until the debt grows and grows and grows and the rift gets bigger. What Paul says is that even though we were in the wrong, even though we are the debtors, even though we owed God the apology, God doesn't hold the grudge. He lets go. He releases us. Even though the wrong is entirely on our side, which, by the way, we don't understand what that's like in our interpersonal human relationships because we are all imperfect. And so anytime there's discord amongst us, you know, it's never always that it's entirely one person's fault. But the reality is, because we're all broken, we all know that we have, if not sinned against that person, we've sinned against somebody. We all know we're imperfect. But in this situation, our relationship with God, the blame entirely lays with us. And yet God entirely releases us. And this doesn't mean that it was easy for God. It doesn't mean that it's just kind of whatever, he just brushes off the sin of humanity. It costs God something. It costs Jesus his life. But the point is that God makes the move and God grants forgiveness. And some have put it this way. God, through Jesus, has absorbed the debt. I find that's an interesting way of looking at it. He's taken it on. He's taken that burden. He did that through the cross. We owed something, and he took that in, absorbed it. I love that word. Now that, in light of how everything was done prior to Jesus' arrival, is absolutely amazing. That's why this is good news of great joy, because God's going to do something about it when we weren't going to do something about it, and we definitely couldn't do something about it. God does. That God would take the first step, that God would seek to change the relationship. The issue was with us, the wrong was on our end, but God absorbs the wrong, and that's the gospel. And it all begins with the incarnation. It all begins with the Christmas story, because the incarnation was God's decisive step towards reconciliation. It was the obvious move forward. So, back to the beginning. And to the theme of reconciliation and to the movies, to the Grinch and the Griswolds and the Scrooges and the Home Alone kid, Macaulay Culkin, whatever his name was. And what was his name? McAllister or something? Kevin McAllister. Back to all these stories we're obsessed with. Back to our sort of our own lives or all these people that we think about, all these rifts that we sense day to day, perhaps. If the incarnation is really chapter one to the reconciliation journey, what's the incarnate implication? If this is what God has done for us and we believe that he wants us to be like him, what does reconciliation mean for us? And how intentional do we need to be about it? I think Jesus speaks really clearly about reconciliation. Sometimes I wish that he didn't, but he does. Peter asks him really clearly about reconciliation. He says, how many times am I supposed to forgive my brother? Seven times? Because that's what everybody else says I should do, and that sounds like that's a lot of times. Jesus says, oh, 70 times seven, which is a picture of like an infinite amount of times, just constantly. And then Jesus follows up with this story of the unmerciful debtor, and you can find it in Matthew 18 and read it later if you don't know the full thing, but the long and short of it is this one guy owed another guy a lot of money, more money than he could possibly pay back, and his debt is forgiven. And then the guy whose debt has been forgiven immediately goes out and finds another guy who owes him a very small amount of money and says, pay me back what you owe me, and grabs him by the neck. And the rest of the story doesn't go too well for the unmerciful debtor at all. Jesus tells this story right on the heels of Peter asking him, how many times should I forgive? Well, as much has been given to you, you need to dole that out as well. So it would seem clear from how Jesus acts and what he says really explicitly, both in teaching, didactic teaching, but also in story after story after story, it would seem really clear that God's expectation on those that he's poured grace on is that they would actually pour grace on others. In John 13, we have this beautiful picture of Jesus at the end of his life when he washes his disciples' feet. And he says, as I've done for you, you need to do for each other. And I don't think that's just about serving each other within the church. I think that's about doing what Jesus did for humanity. Forgiving, loving, pouring grace out constantly, serving, humbling ourselves, even when it feels really awkward and really difficult. What I've done for you, you've got to do that for each other as well. The simple truth is that reconciliation was never intended to just be a God-to-human action. Reconciliation, God's intention for it is that it would also be a human-to-human action. And that's how the world's really changed. I said it was going to be simple this evening, and I really meant it. It's really that straightforward. Reconciliation does not stop with our interaction with God. It has to go with each other. So I think we've talked about why reconciliation is important to share about at Christmas, the same reason that all the movies do, all the stories do. This is the time of year, I think, that we find ourselves surrounded with friends and family, which is why it can feel awkward. I don't know about you, but I have that happen in my life. It can feel different. You can sense what you've avoided most of the year because those people are there. And you can feel the loss of relationship, the loss of friendship. And so it's probably not going to be hard this time of year for us to find ourselves in places and with people where reconciliation is both craved but needed in order for a family or a friendship or a working relationship to actually move forward and to not just get stuck and be broken and be fruitless. I'll simply leave it at that. I really do think that, you know, I don't know, I was thinking about this afternoon, because this is the only time I've shared. Usually we share like four times on a Sunday. And so this is really just for you, and I believe that God's gathered us together for a reason. And I want you to know that talking about reconciliation is kind of awkward and hard, because like it flows from the guy who dings your car at Walmart, right? All the way to that person in your family who scarred you for life. So I can't possibly like apply this to you specifically. I don't actually know everything that goes on in your life, to be totally honest with you. But this is the truth of what God has done for us, and this is what he calls us to. And I just believe that the Spirit would really want us to understand this season, and we would really miss the whole point of that decisive step of Jesus if we were not to see this unfold in our lives in some small way. The simple truth is that reconciliation is not just about God to human, it's about human to human. So, given that it's hard, given that I don't know your situation, given that I've got about 35 people rushing through my mind as well as I talk about this kind of stuff, I just want to lay out a biblical template, perhaps, of reconciliation, what it can look like. And again, maybe there's going to be question after question. What about this? What about this? What about this? There's space for the questions, but just for now, maybe consider if this is a possibility for you. I think the first thing that we need to do if we want to move forward in a reconciliation journey is really recognize the reality, is really to face the rift, to admit to the debt, to face the problem. And that can really be the hardest thing, to finally say, yeah, there's a problem there. And not, oh, maybe I'm just feeling it and they're not feeling it. Maybe it's okay. Maybe they've forgotten. Maybe I shouldn't get so hung up on this stuff. The first thing and the hardest thing can often be just to accept that it's there. This is not working. And maybe something needs to change to face that. God faced that with humanity. It breaks his heart. It was hard. Hard for him to journey with humanity once he created us and we rebelled. Time and time again, we fell away. But he faces it. And he looked it in the face and he decided to do something about it, which is the next thing. And that's taking the first step. I hate taking the first step. It's the worst sometimes, isn't it? It's really awkward and difficult. But it's the only way things change. Somebody has to lead. Somebody has to do something about it. Somebody has been spoken to by God and they need to move on it. Jesus speaks really clearly to the first step. And he doesn't really say it's going to be easy, which is annoying, but he does say that we do need to do it because he knows, plain and simple, it's the only way things are going to change. In Matthew 5, Jesus is talking about how we're supposed to interact with each other and how we're supposed to worship together. And at one point he says, you know, if you're going to the temple to give a sacrifice, he's speaking to the culture of his time, and you see that there's somebody there and they have something against you, you know, go and be reconciled to them before you give your gift. And it's interesting that he says that. He says, not if you have something against somebody else, but if you think that they've got a beef with you, you need to go and do something about it. What we discover as Jesus continues to teach is that the onus is never on the other person. The onus, whether you have done them wrong or they have done you wrong, is always on you. It's always on us. So if we're to be a follower of Jesus, we have to realize that the first step always has to be with us. And so my prayer for, I mean, even just our Christian community of Living Waters is that we would be constantly trying to beat each other to the first step, that we'd always be willing to step out first. But that can often be really challenging, and I understand that, when there's a rift, particularly within family, particularly where there's a long-standing debt, when there's something really hard, particularly if you've taken the first step before and the door's been slammed in your face. My encouragement to you, along with much counsel and prayer I'm sure that you take from other people, is to perhaps be risky enough to listen to the Spirit and take that first step again. Thirdly, quite simply, as we said before, we need to do what God does and calls us to and says he will enable us to do, and that is absorb the debt. And it will cost us something. And you think about that first step, it looks really challenging, it looks really difficult, but That's because it is. I don't know any other way of putting it. It's hard. Forgiveness is challenging, whether you need to ask for it or you need to extend it. But just because it's hard doesn't mean it's not really good. And by forgiving somebody or accepting forgiveness, you free yourself as well as the other person. And what's hopefully on the end of the other side of that forgiveness journey is a life way better than a place spent divided and irreconciled. And the fourth thing I really think is that we must keep focused on the God who reconciled you to himself and draw your inspiration and courage from him. I was thinking about this afternoon, and I thought about all those times where it's really scary to move forward in the reconciliation journey. And I thought, maybe every time I feel afraid or every time I feel really anxious about that, I just need to picture the manger. Because that was the decisive step. Look at the manger and draw some courage and bravery. As Leanne said last week, look at the baby who is vulnerable, who put himself in other people's hands, who is willing to risk for the sake of love and reconciliation, and draw some courage and inspiration and bravery from that. Jesus, we thank you for our time together tonight. And though we all absolutely are so thankful that you have reconciled us to yourself and that we are together with you, we find there's so many little areas of our lives that need for that grace to seep through, especially when it connects with other people. God, I pray for those of us in the room who are people who have admittedly had hard hearts towards this kind of thing. Those of us who are quick to shift blame onto other people, Jesus, we recognize that in this moment. Those of us who just who've had hard hearts in this way, Lord, we ask that you would soften us, that you would help us to accept your love and your grace and to really understand your compassion and how it's been given to us.